Bold and raw perspectives of local politics. Important information which impacts our community, nation, and world. Exposing truth, transparency, and getting to the heart of relevant issues that you just won't see in the clickbait media. And always keeping it real. It's the Michelle Tanner Podcast.
But I won't back down.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Michelle Tanner Podcast. I want to first give a shout out to our sponsor, Bella Two Medical. That's BellaTuMedical.com, right here in St. George. Although, even if you live out of state, there are telemedicine visits offered. It's really a fusion of Western medicine and functional medicine. So definitely alternative treatments, IV infusions, med spa as well, an amazing esthetician who does all things from facials, laser hair removal, skin resurfacing. So definitely check out Bella2Medical.com. All right, y'all, I am really excited for today's episode. This is one race that really, to me, is one of the most important elections we have going on right now in the state of Utah, and that is for our attorney general position. And also why I'm excited for today's episode is this has been a race where I haven't been 100% decided on which way to go. And so Trent Christensen, who is joining me today via Skype, has been highly recommended. I've actually had several people reach out and say, can you please get Trent Christensen on the podcast? In fact, even my own dad, who is a true patriot, he was the final straw where I'm like, okay, I definitely have to get Trent on. If my dad is impressed with Trent, then I definitely need to talk to Trent Christensen. So Trent Christensen, welcome to the Michelle Tanner Podcast.
So grateful to be here, Michelle. Yeah, I love meeting your dad. I love being down in Washington County. We're going to be back down there, but so grateful for the time that you're going to spend today with me and to talk to your listeners. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's first just start with, who is Trent Christensen? What is your background and what has led you to run in this crazy race to be Utah's next attorney general?
I appreciate that. I'm going to go back a step and talk about my mom's parents. This is the bloodline that I come from. So my mom's from Argentina. She came here and was a legal immigrant to the United States in 1963. The reason they left Argentina is because at the time, the Peronistas, Eva Perón, and those people were in power. My grandfather was a fairly affluent bank manager at the time. They told him he had to endorse Eva Perón if he wanted to keep his job. So he came home and told his wife, we're moving, we're leaving, I'm not gonna do it. I'm not giving in, I'm not gonna be told what I need to do. That's not the country I grew up in, it's not the country I wanna be in, we're going to America. And so they came here, and that's where I come from. That's my background. That's my bloodline. I've lived in Utah my whole life, lifelong Utah. I grew up in Salt Lake. I went to BYU, BYU Law School, graduated top 10% of my class, went back east, practiced litigation at a big law firm in Boston. I did appellate work back there, complex business litigation. But I also did a lot of pro bono work protecting parental rights. And that really formed the basis for me of why I'm running in this race. And I can get into that in a little bit. I have a story about the first trial I ever did that I think your listeners will find interesting. But I came back to Utah in 2015, having spent that time as a litigator. And I came back and I became a CEO. And I ran a company. I've hired, I've fired, I've made payroll. I've done everything that a CEO does. You know, I increased revenue in my company four times from when I took it over. And I bring that up because the next attorney general is going to need not just litigation experience, but leadership experience. We are in a time of real need for leadership. And so I come as a CEO, I come as someone that's had litigation background, and I come as someone that's not going to give in to the establishment. And here's the reason I got into the race. Okay, so last October, I was reading the news, several people have been talking to me about getting into this race, and I kind of been thinking about it. And I saw an article that came up in KSL, and it said that there was a senator in Utah County that had proposed an idea to take the attorney general's job and make it an appointed position under the governor. And right then I knew it's time to run. We are in the last days. We have an administration that's trying to consolidate power and take the voice away from the people. And that's not what I'm gonna allow in this state, in my state. So I said, okay, I'm getting in. The Attorney General, and I will say this multiple times probably during this podcast, the Attorney General is the single most important check that the people have against the powers of government at every level. The Attorney General can check the powers of the governor, can check the powers of the legislature, of the judiciary, but not even just at a state level. The Attorney General can check the powers of the federal government and even the counties. Every level of government, every officer of government, every branch of government, that's the power of an Attorney General. So you have to stop and ask yourself, why would it be so important for the governor to want to take that job away from the people and consolidate it under him? Essentially take the most important chess piece that the people have and take it and give it to your opponent. Why is that? And it led me to think, okay, we need some priorities. We need some big changes in this office. So I came in with a pretty big vision. I have three pillars that I want to accomplish, and it's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take a lot of cooperation with the people to get those things done. So that's a little bit of my background, and I'd love to get into it a little bit more if you have any specific questions on that.
Yeah, I love that, and that is terrifying. It should be terrifying to anyone that Governor Cox wants to take away an elected position, a position as vital as the Attorney General, as you mentioned, a huge check and balance to that office, and appoint someone. Which, is it true that he was wanting to appoint Derrick Brown?
Well, I don't know who his appointment was going to be. The legislator that proposed it just happens to be his brother-in-law.
Oh,
and also
that's
happens
convenient.
To be an attorney. Right. And so, you know, there were some rumors that it was going to be him. Maybe it was going to be Derrick Brown. I don't know. But here's the thing. The governor got so much pushback on that plan. I mean, people just went crazy because to any sort of common sense individual, that's crazy. Right. And by the way, he's also trying to do it with the school board,
right,
and with the auditor and with the treasurer. There's been talk about taking the county sheriffs and taking that away from the voice of the people, having that be an appointment. Right. So it isn't just the Attorney General, but that's where they started. And like I said, he got so much pushback on that plan that they backed off of it. But all they essentially did was went to plan B. And plan B was to get your guy elected. Why go through the whole hassle of passing a constitutional amendment when you can just get your guy elected? And that's Derrick Brown. And that's why I'm running in this race, to provide an alternative, to say you need someone who's not part of the establishment, who's not part of government, who hasn't spent their career fighting for government or having contracts and working for the government, right? I haven't done any of those things. But let me be crystal clear. Those aren't bad things, right? We need good state attorneys. We need attorneys that are fighting on the side of the good guys. But if you haven't ever fought the state, if you've only ever fought for the state, you have a different mindset, right? Your mindset is, oh, I got to help the state. I got to win for the state. I got to help this agency. I got to forward their agenda. My only thing is I have to fight for the people. And that's it. Even against the power of government, the power of my own office, if necessary. And it's entirely different mindset because, again, if you've never fought against the state, if the state's never come after you, DCFS, Division of Securities, any of them, right? You don't understand the full power and resources that the government can bring to bear to destroy your life. And the Attorney General needs to be that bulwark between the state and the individual rights of the people to protect you when the state comes for you.
Absolutely.
And that's what I want.
Yeah, no, I absolutely appreciate that perspective. And I mean, the fact that Governor Cox is trying to centralize and give the executive branch more power, that alone should be huge red flags why people should absolutely not be voting for someone who doesn't understand the importance of separation of powers in this country. But, you know, along the lines of Governor Cox, I want to bring up a post that was going around, a picture of you, I think the company that you represent Governor Cox. And it was essentially saying that your company is aiding Governor Cox in his smart cities initiative. Can you explain that further?
Yeah, nothing could be farther from the truth. So let me back up and explain a little bit of something about my company. When I came back to Utah, I mentioned in 2015, I became a CEO of a venture accelerator. So if you don't know what that is, that's an organization. We would bring in entrepreneurs. They would apply to be part of our program, and we would mentor them. We brought on 80 to 90 entrepreneurs a year and helped them raise the seed fund for their company. So you'd get a 25-year-old with an amazing tech idea, right? And they needed some money to start their company. We would help them do that, right? And do the appropriate paperwork, get everything so it was right. Through that, I learned a lot about tech, right? We had a lot of tech companies came through, and I got hired by my current company. It's called OmniTech. It's a company that does predictive AI. And if you're not familiar with predictive AI, I'll just put it to you this way. In the world of AI, there's sort of normal AI that's like ChatGPT. We all familiar with ChatGPT. And then over here, you've kind of got quantum, crazy stuff, right? That I don't understand. Right here is predictive AI. Okay, that's sort of the next generation of AI. And basically saying it's an AI platform that was coincidentally developed for military use that is able to predict human behavior. Okay, it's a fascinating technology. And it's you can use it in a lot of different scenarios. So I think it was last November, if I remember right. It was a few months ago. The governor put together an industry luncheon. And he does this, right? He'll do it with construction, or he'll do it with, you know, tech, or he'll do it with AI, right? And if you're not familiar with it, AI and tech are very, they're similar, but they're very different, okay? So he put it together with AI, and it was some industry experts and some academics and other CEOs of other companies. And we all went around the table and explained what we were doing in that realm. And it was fascinating to hear what other CEOs are doing, what the tech, or excuse me, the industry experts were saying, what's happening around the country, what's happening around the world. And we got to me and I started explaining what we're doing, and it just blew everybody's minds. They were like, whoa, we hadn't heard of that. We didn't know that's possible. Tell us what you're doing, right? So it was more helping the industry here understand we're here, we're next level in AI. Now, after that was all done, we took a picture, right? And that's great. I'm happy to be a part of a picture where I'm saying, look, I want to further the discussion for AI, because AI is here. It's here to stay. And if you don't understand AI, if your next attorney general doesn't understand AI, you're behind the black ball. You're behind the eight ball, right? They're already, and when I say they, I mean the government, they're already using digital passports, ESG, trying to build out these 15-minute cities. They're trying to use this technology in a way that would restrict your individual rights, or in some cases, just flatly take them away. But they can't do that to me because I understand the technology. They can't pull the wool over my eyes. I've seen it. I know what they're talking about. And they're not going to, you know, I don't need to go out and talk to anybody else to understand it. I understand it because I've been living it with my company. So that's what that picture is. It wasn't me saying, hey, we're going to help the governor take your rights away. That was me saying, we're going to participate in this larger community of companies here in Utah that are doing AI. But let me tell you something else. On our website, and I want to address this, we have a page on the OmniTech website that talks about smart city technology. Okay. And what I always tell people about that is this is smart city technology. A lot of people have, you know, iWatches. That's smart city technology. Anything that an innovator or an entrepreneur comes up with that can make your life more efficient, better, right? That's smart technology. I have a smart printer. My laundry machine is smart. It talks to my cell phone, right? It's credible. So that's what smart city technology is. But with anything else, like the internet or your smartphone or whatever, those are technologies that the government can come and take and bastardize and use to take your individual rights away. Now, the chairman of my company is a retired four-star general. He was the first commander of the U.S. Space Command, and he was appointed by President Trump. His name is General Lance W. Lord. My CEO is the former executive director of the International Space Station under NASA. My CTO, my chief technology officer, 25 years former naval, DOD, and CIA intelligence. And I actually sat down with him and said, okay, guys, tell me what this means. And they said, well, it's smart technology. It's what we do. We build technology that makes people's lives better. And I said, well, this is how people understand it in a conservative context. And General Lord looked me right in the eye and said, Trent, I have bled for this country. There's no way the technology that we are building will be used to take people's rights away. In fact, if anything, we're going to be the ones standing between government and people's rights. That's who we are, right? And that's what you need. You can't just say, well, I'm a litigator, so therefore I can protect you from what's coming from AI. You know, I've been in the courts. I've worked for the state. I can protect you from AI. I've lived that world. I understand what they're trying to do with the digital passports, with the 15-minute cities. And that is a hill that I will die on to make sure that that is never used in this state to take people's rights away.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that clarification, because that is, I think, a big concern for a lot of residents here, is that push toward 15-minute cities, which is concern for surveillance. And like you said, ultimately restricting God-given rights protected by the Constitution. Right. And, you know, God forbid we have another COVID scenario. So, that's an interesting, you know, background and expertise that you bring to the table. Now, that brings me to my next question that you've received some controversy over is, are you licensed to practice law here in Utah? Do we need to be concerned that if we elect you, will you be able to legally practice law here in the state?
You know what's interesting about that? So I'll give the background on that. So like I said, I graduated top 10% of my class at BYU, and I got a job at a big law firm out in Boston. So when I passed the bar, I passed the Massachusetts bar and practiced out in Boston. And when I came back to Utah, anybody that deals with a license understands this. You know, CPAs deal with licensing, teachers, public school teachers deal with licensing, hairdressers deal with licensing, right? Massachusetts and Utah have reciprocity. And that's that. You can practice on a limited basis here in Utah using your Massachusetts license, right? There's things you have to do and certain filings you have to have, but yeah, you can practice. And if I'm a member of the bar in Utah and Massachusetts, you have to pay two sets of bar dues and you have to get CLE twice, right? And so I have the full right to practice law in Utah. I've been a lawyer since 2009, and that's what I did. Now, in the middle of last year, I decided, you know what? I want to get my full bar license, even before I decided to run in this race. So I started the application. I got it filed. And the funny thing is, whenever you deal with a bureaucracy, there's just delays, right? On the portal where you can see, you know, you can see the bar, you can see how they're progressing through your application. I submitted my application. They didn't download it to start working on it for 2 months. So it just sat there for 2 months. Like it should be done. It should have been done 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. That's what a bureaucracy is. So am I licensed? Yes. Am I able to practice law in Utah? Yes. But here's the interesting thing. So about a month ago, the Utah County Republican women held a debate. And it was fantastic, Provo Library. And I came out swinging. I came out swinging against Governor Cox, against some of my other opponents. They didn't like that. Okay, that was on a Monday. On a Tuesday, the very next day, Brian Schott over the Salt Lake Tribune happens to come out with an article saying Trent Christensen can't practice law. The very next day, so Wednesday, and we responded to that article and said, no, Brian, that's not true. Here are the facts, right? The very next day, I got a personal call on this phone from Deidre Henderson, Lieutenant Governor, saying, hey, Trent, we need to start an investigation into your campaign. I said, really? That's interesting to me. Okay, let's do that. And I asked her, I said, look, are you going to recuse yourself? And she said, well, why would I recuse myself? This is my investigation. I said, but Lieutenant Governor, respectfully, you are the co-chair on the Finance Committee of the Derrick Brown campaign. Mm-hmm. Your job is to certify elections, but you're raising money for Derrick Brown. You shouldn't recuse yourself from any investigation of me. And she didn't. Okay.
Wow.
On Thursday, I responded. And on Friday, so all within 1 week, I get a call from Lieutenant Governor's office from the attorney. There's an assistant attorney general that works there who basically just said, look, we would like this to go away. And I said, well, here's how it's going to go away. You're going to give me a full written response that details exactly what I already know is true, that I have every legal right to be in this race, every legal right to be the attorney general, as long as I become a member of the bar by January of next year. And I have that decision in my email by 9 a.m. And
absolutely.
That was that.
Yeah.
So I have a full, you know, decision by the lieutenant governor, signed by the lieutenant governor herself, that says, yeah, everything's good. And here's the fun part of this. It's going to get decided probably in the next month or so. I mean, I don't know. Again, it's a bureaucracy. Who knows when it's going to happen? But when it does, I'm going to invite every single one of the other AG opponents. I'm going to invite Brian Schott. I'm going to invite Lieutenant Governor Henderson. Come and celebrate. Come and see the swearing-in ceremony where I become a member of the Utah Bar. I would love to have them there. So this is sort of a Michelle, you're invited too.
Yes,
everybody's invited.
I will be there.
Sort of a preliminary invitation to celebrate the American process and come celebrate with me the swearing-in of your next attorney general.
I just think it's amazing. I mean, you must really be something special for the lieutenant governor to actually do her freaking job and actually investigate something that has to do with elections. I mean, not right. to mention the conflict of interest that you brought up, but it's like, right. you know, we have Orem City showing 100,000 election law violations that she turns her nose at, doesn't even seem to think that that's any type of an issue. We have her putting her thumb on the scale for Celeste Malloy, you know, overlooking our own election laws and on and on and on, you know, refuses to release the cast vote record system. So if you haven't noticed, I have a huge issue with our lieutenant governor's office and the lack of transparency with our elections. What can you do as the attorney general to make our elections more transparent here in the state of Utah?
Right. Well, and that's why it's one of my top issues, Michelle. I mean, I got into this race because there is a culture of corruption in our state and in our federal government. And there is a culture of corruption because there is an utter lack of election integrity in this state. It's my number one issue. It's what I say at every debate, at every forum, at every speech I give. It's the number one thing I talk about. I'm an America First candidate for Utah Attorney General, and I will ensure that we have election integrity in this state. And by that, I mean, let me tell you how I want to do that. On day one of the Trent Christensen Attorney General administration, we are going to begin a full statewide transparent audit of Utah's electoral system. I want to see the ballots. I want to see the mail-in ballots. I want to test the machines. I want to talk to the clerks. I want to talk to their staffs. I want to investigate and audit the company that's supposed to be cleaning our voter rolls. But study after study has shown that they're making the voter rolls worse, right? Why are we sending them money? There's 100 different components to election integrity, not least of which is the fact that the governor tried to take the AG away from the people and make it his appointment. That's on another component of election integrity. But without running that audit, we won't have the hard facts to be able to go to the legislature and say, look, here's what's working. Here's what's not working. Here's who needs to go to jail, right? Whatever. We need to get these fixed. And people have said to me, well, okay, well, hold on, Trent. Isn't it the lieutenant governor's job to run elections? And the answer to that is yes. But again, I'll say it again. The state attorney general is the single most important check against every other branch and officer of government that the people have. So if there's an investigation of any other branch or officer of government, the attorney general can just wake up and do it, can go to war. And that's what I'm going to do. I don't need the lieutenant governor's permission. I don't need the legislature's permission. We can just investigate it and make sure to see whether it's working or not. Okay. In my personal opinion, our elections need to go back to on paper, in person, period. But the only thing the attorney general can't do is pass a law, right? You need the legislature right for that. And so you need to gather the facts. You can't just say, well, this is what I want. And trust me, it's better. Let's go get the data. Again, I've been a CEO. I've never been part of an organization that didn't voluntarily audit its books and then share that information with the people that need to see it, right? Investors, shareholders, board members. But we don't do that in government. And we don't do it for a reason, because they don't want people to see what's happening with our elections, right? I think it was just 2 weeks ago, Michelle, the lieutenant governor proposed voting by phone. You just get on your phone, boop, boop, boop. There, you voted.
Yeah, that sounds secure.
You do that and it's gone. It's over. The election is over. It's gone. We don't control it. And now they are selecting our elected officials instead of having us actually elect them. It's over. And so that's what I'm saying is we need to dial back in the exceptions. And I'll give you an example. My mom, she's 79 years old. She's beautiful. She's kind of homebound. She would benefit from a mail-in ballot if she requests it, right? But that's an exception. It's not the rule. It's not the way everybody should be doing it. If people want to be informed and take the time to leave their house, leave their employment, go and vote, those are the people we want to have voting because they care, right? They've done their homework. They know the issues. So that's why number one issue for me is election integrity. If we don't have election integrity, we have nothing. And that's where I want to start.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that that is your number one, because I think for most Utahns, that is our number one concern. And the fact that we have a governor and LG right now where these concerns were raised, instead of addressing these concerns, no, what they do is they spend our money to go put out billboards, propaganda to tell us why we should just be trusting them. I mean, that's a safe huge.
And it's safe and secure. It's all here. Yes. Safe and secure, right?
Exactly.
Go back to sleep. It's safe and secure.
Exactly. So thank you for being willing to take that issue head on. What are your other two pillars that you mentioned?
Well, they're related. So the second one is the attorney general is the top cop. You have to be willing to be the top cop. But again, everybody understands the attorney general is the chief law enforcement officer of the state, but that doesn't make him or her the state's attorney. It makes them your attorney against the power of the state, right? But the state attorney general can't strap a gun to his hip and go out in a patrol car and arrest people, right? We have people that do that, professionals that do that, law enforcement, local, state law enforcement. We have the county sheriffs. Again, the county sheriffs are the only members of law enforcement that are properly elected by the people. But here's the thing, the relationship between the sheriffs, law enforcement, and the attorney general's office is strained. It's almost non-existent, okay? And if you're asking the county sheriffs to go tell their deputies, hey, will you go please put your life on the line and enforce our laws and arrest these people that are breaking our laws? And maybe the state attorney general's got your back. Maybe he's going to prosecute them. Maybe he's not, right? Why would they do that? That's not fair to ask them to do that. The county sheriffs have meetings every month. They all get together, okay? The attorney general doesn't go to those. At least hasn't in the last year, is what I've been told. Why? That's the easiest thing to do, right? But here's the thing that I always say about this position. It's a little cheesy, but I'm going to say it. The position isn't attorney litigator. It's not attorney soldier, right? It's attorney general. And that applies a level of leadership. It implies strategy. It implies the ability to be at 30,000 feet, to see into the future, right? To look around corners and develop a strategy that's going to win the ultimate war. But you can't have a legal strategy without having law enforcement involved at every level of that. I've often said the sheriffs, law enforcement, they are the tip of the spear, but the attorney general is the spear, right? And you need the whole thing in order to actually enforce our laws. And that leads me to my third point, which is secure the border. Without that relationship, with law enforcement, with the county sheriffs, there's no way you're going to be able to actually enforce our laws and secure our border. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Utah has a border, right? You know, we have other organizations, other states that are fighting, like Texas, the actual southern border, right? But what about our border, okay? We have state laws that aren't being enforced right now. We have criminals that are coming into our state and illegal immigrants, and they're doing drug trafficking, sex trafficking, child trafficking, right? And they're bringing it into our state, but we're not enforcing it. Well, why? Why is that? Because ICE and the federal government, and this is a trick that the federal government will often do, they've promulgated 700 pages of regulations of what county sheriffs or local law enforcement have to do when they arrest an illegal alien, okay? Everything from, you know, the illegal alien has to come in through a separate door than everybody else. The illegal alien gets different hand soap and hand lotion than everybody else. I mean, crazy things, right? And the reason they do that is to make it so it's almost impossible for any county sheriff or any law enforcement officers to actually hold the illegal aliens. In fact, in those regulations, they can't hold them more than 24 to 48 hours. So a lot of our law enforcement have just said, well, then what's the point, right? What's the point? And here's what I say to that. Those people that have come into our state and broken our laws, they need to be prosecuted because they broke our laws. But I can't tell the county sheriffs to go arrest them unless I'm willing to back that up, right? So what you do is you get with the county sheriffs, you get with law enforcement, right? I've met with the Fraternal Order of Police. You develop a strategy where you say, okay, here's what's going to happen. Whenever we find this happening, here's our approach. And I'm going to back you up from the Attorney General's office. Whenever we find this happening, here's our approach. And I'm going to back you up from the Attorney General's office. I mean, just this week in American Fork, they arrested someone who'd been detained, deported numerous times, was back in the country, with a 30-pound bag of fentanyl in his possession and a big wad of cash, right? Now, that violates state laws, our state laws. And we could prosecute that person under our state laws, detain them, prosecute them, and then get them out of our state. I mean, we all know that I-15 is a major corridor, right, between Mexico and Canada. It comes right up through Utah, and then you've got I-80, right, coming horizontally across. We have the ability to stop all the illegal activity that's happening there by enforcing our laws, but only in partnership with law enforcement are we going to be able to do that. I'll give you another example. Right now, we know that federal law enforcement officers are coming in and they're dropping off busloads of illegals. County sheriffs know what's happening. They know where it's happening. Okay. But we don't do anything about that because of the 700 pages of regulations I told you about. Well, if a federal agent comes in and does that, that act in and of itself violates our state laws. Okay. We could arrest the federal agents along with the illegal immigrants that they're dropping off. And people are like, whoa, you can't arrest federal agents. Well, yeah, you can. If a federal agent walked into our state and killed somebody, you can prosecute them. They broke our state laws. And if they come in and drop off illegal aliens, yeah, you can arrest them because they violated our state laws. But I'm not going to ask the deputies and the sheriffs to do that unless they know I got their back, right? So when that happens, what do you think the federal government's going to do? You just arrested some of their federal agents? They're going to go crazy. And that's how you take the fight back to them, okay? You say, no, you're not doing that in Utah. You're not doing that in our state. We can support what Texas is doing, but we can also enforce our laws here. And that's what I want to do as Attorney General. It's not enough to just turn a blind eye to it and hope the federal government, you know, gets their act together. Hope that President Trump wins, which, by the way, I've endorsed President Trump all the way back in January, the first person to do so in this race. But you can't just hope. Hope isn't a strategy. You can't hope that President Trump's going to win and fix it. You got to fight it now. And that's what I want to do as Attorney General. I've actually heard whisperings from people that I've talked to that some of the other Attorney General candidates are saying Trent can't do the things that he's promising that he can do, which tells me that they are either unwilling or incapable of taking on the big issues, right? The Attorney General can prosecute the laws, can show up, do his 9-to-5 job, great. But if you're not willing to take the big steps, right, to take on the big fights, to fight for election integrity, to improve our relationships with law enforcement, to fight to secure our border and keep the criminal activity out of the state, then in my opinion, you don't have any business being Attorney General.
Amen. And that is the point we are at in this country. If we don't have people willing to take on the big issues, and one thing that you really hit on, which is one of the number one qualities I look for in a candidate when I'm vetting candidates, is leadership versus establishment. Those are the two types of elected officials we have in this country. You're either going to elect someone who's part of the establishment or will be essentially the establishment's bitch and do whatever they're told they have to do, or you have someone who is a true leader and is willing to step up, maybe be unconventional, maybe be willing to go against the grain of how things have, quote, oh, that's just how we do it, right? We are at the point where we have to look for other avenues. And what you've described to me is actually just common sense. So the fact that we're not already doing that is actually really troublesome. So, I thought we had 10 more minutes left. We got Sean trying to cut us off over here. We still got lots to talk about. So, anyway, I appreciate that you do seem to be coming more from a leadership position in coming into this AG. So what other things set you apart from the other candidates in this race?
Well, and I'll get back to something you just said. There's an ability and a willingness to do the job, right? And as I mentioned before, you know, we need good state attorneys in this job, in this state. I know a lot of the attorneys in the Attorney General's office. I went to law school with a lot of them. Those people, those attorneys could be working anywhere in the country, earning any salary they wanted to, but they choose to be here. They choose to be here because they want to make a difference. And so it's frustrating to them to have an attorney general that maybe doesn't want to make the same difference or isn't doing it on a scale where they, you know, because they live here, their kids live here, right? They want to benefit this state. But again, if you've been an attorney for the state your whole life and you upset the state, that's a little bit risky, right? If your entire job depends on having the state be happy and pleased with you, then you don't really have the flexibility to do what you need to do, right? Or if you've been a lobbyist your whole career, or if you've been in politics your whole career, okay? You don't have the flexibility of saying, you know what? If I have to break this, I'm gonna break it. If I have to burn something down, I'm gonna burn it down. If we had to do something a little differently, that's what we're gonna do. I used this example the other day. The iPhone didn't exist until it did, right?
Right.
Your car didn't exist until it did. All of a sudden, somebody came along and said, you know what? We're gonna do something a little bit differently, and I bet it's gonna work. And that's what I want to do. I can do that because I come not just as a litigator, I have that background and that experience, but I have the background of saying, hey, you know what? This company was run a certain way for a long time. It served its purpose. Now we're going to do something different. And it worked. We were able to increase revenues 400 times, really. And we were able to bring on more companies, help more companies, right? And now I'm doing that with the company that I work for, Omnitech, you know, growing it bigger. That's the kind of attitude you need. It's not enough to just show up and do the job, right? You have to show up and think, again, strategy, attorney general, how do we get from here to here? And what are we going to do? And what's it going to take? And guess what? We're not going to stop until it's done, right? Government has the benefit of saying, that's good enough, right? You get that with government. Election integrity, that's good enough, right? Doesn't work that way in business. You either hit your objective or people lose their jobs, right? Your company goes under. So people in the private sector don't have the luxury of saying, meh, that's good enough. And that's the background that I come from. We're not going to stop until we have total election integrity in this state. And that may take 4 years. It may take 8 years. But let me tell you exactly why I use that particular number, okay? I'm the only one in this race so far that I've heard that's talking about term limits. I will only serve in this job for 8 years. That's 2 terms, okay? And the unfortunate thing about the attorney general, I don't know why this is. It seems to be this way in every state. Nobody just does the job because they want to just do that job. You'll find people that always become attorney general because they want to be the governor, or they become attorney general because they want to become a senator, right? They always see it as a stepping stone to a higher office. And if that's the case, again, you're not going to be willing to do the hard things that need to happen in order to enforce individual rights. I'll give you an example. Right now, there are people in multiple counties that have told me, Trent, there's some stuff going on in the counties here. We need your help. But every time we talk to the attorney general's office, they say, hey, we can't do anything about it. But if you're the attorney general and your goal is to become a governor, you're not going to go prosecute a county commissioner or somebody breaking the law in the county. You need their endorsement later. I don't know. But if there's a company that's breaking the law, a big company, and you need to go after them, you need to protect the law, well, maybe there'll be a donor later for my Senate campaign. I can't go after them, right? That's what you get with people who get into this job and want to do it for 12 years, 16 years. They want to use it as a platform to become a governor. In no universe do I want to become a governor. What I want to do is do this job for 8 years and then go back to my company because I really like my company. My youngest, my son is 12. In 8 years, he'll be 20. And by that time, he'll be out of the house. I'll have fixed the state. I feel good about that. I can just kind of let everything roll and let the next person take over. So that's another area where I'm different. I'm the only one that's talking about being in the office for 2 terms, you know, and being done and literally going back to my job, not running for a higher office. But I'll also say this, you know, I mentioned it last night. We had two county conventions last night, Summit and Wasatch, and I mentioned it, and man, you get the biggest roar from the crowd when you say this. I say, look, Donald Trump needs allies, and he will have no bigger ally than the Trent Christensen Attorney General Administration in Utah. And people go bananas because they understand what's happening in our country. They understand that the Biden regime is trying desperately over the next year to do as much as they can to take our rights away. And when Trump comes back in, and hopefully he wins, and I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that happens, he can roll some of that back, right? But he needs allies in the states. He needs attorney generals, white hats, courageous. They're going to get out there and fight this fight with him, right? Roll back what the Biden administration has done. Without that, President Trump is hampered, right? He's already going to be a lame duck president. He only gets one term left. He needs help. And the attorney generals, I'll say it again, are the single most important check against the powers of government that any branch has, okay, that the citizens have against the powers of government. Donald Trump knows that, and he's going to lean on us to help. But again, if your entire focus is, well, I'm going to be the attorney general, I'm going to show up 9 to 5, I'm going to enforce the laws, I'm not going to take on these big issues, that's political, I don't want to deal with election integrity, I don't want to deal with that, I'm just going to do my job, you know, then that's not what this state needs. And it's not what's called for at this time in our history. This time in our history calls for a fighter, for someone who's going to take on the big issues, regardless of where it leads, fight it, regardless of who it takes off, and win it. And that's what I'm going to do.
Absolutely. I so appreciate that because, yes, the last thing we need is another establishment puppet in there to not get anything done. And it blows my mind how someone can actually claim to be a Republican or a conservative or even a liberty, freedom loving American for that matter, and not be fully behind President Trump. How can you claim, you know, to be a candidate who cares about the border, but yet you're not behind President Trump? It makes sense to me. He's the clear option. So I appreciate that you're willing to be bold, come out in support, be bold on the issues. Are there any other issues that you haven't had an opportunity to touch on yet that you think is vital for the attorney general?
Yeah, let me mention this. This comes up a lot. And it's very important. Our public lands, right? The land that the federal government has taken and is continuing to take from Utah. But let me get back to just to your point about the president for a second. Every other candidate in this race has said something to the effect of, hey, you know what? I'm going to fight to limit federal involvement in the states. Great. Okay. But you don't get to say that unless you can also boldly pronounce that you will endorse Donald J. Trump, because he is the only president in modern history that has actually limited federal involvement in the states. So you don't get to claim that you're going to champion federalism without endorsing Donald Trump. You don't get to claim you're going to champion regulation reform and all these other things without endorsing Donald Trump. And it's not enough to say, I get a little sick of this, I will support our nominee. Yeah. All that is politicians speak for, I hope Trump doesn't win and somebody else does because I don't want to say his name.
Absolutely.
Right? You have to come out and boldly state he's our president. He's the leader of our party. He needs to be the next president of the United States. But let me get back to public lands. There's so much that has to happen on that issue. Currently, right now, there are 60 cases in federal court pending that Utah's filed against the federal government that deal with public lands. Water rights, grazing rights, access to public lands. Along the Wasatch Front, people don't really understand this, but you know, the dirt tourism that we have in the state, Zions, Moab, those sort of things, they bring more money into this state than skiing. But all along the Wasatch Front, we just think, well, skiing is the biggest tourism thing, whatever, right? These people in rural, outside of the Wasatch Front, they need to be protected, right? There's a case right now in Uinta County where the Ute Indian tribe is claiming original jurisdiction over the water rights. It's just one example. That's a big deal. If they win that case, it changes life along the Wasatch Front because it changes water prices. It changes how the relationship we have to that water, okay? The attorney general's office has sent their B team, their C team. They're not taking it seriously. And that's the job of a general, is to prioritize. What are the most important cases? Where do we need to send most of our resources, right? You're dealing with budget cuts. You're dealing with the legislature. You're dealing with all these different things, but you still have to fight the fight. And there's a lot of things we could do with public lands. I see we've got 1 minute left. I have a lot of ideas on that. Prosecutorial reform, judicial reform, all the things that we can do in this state to give the power back to the people. Regulatory reform. The attorney general is the single most, he's the highest regulatory officer in the state. I can make massive changes across every regulatory agency, okay? All of those things can happen if you're willing to fight the big fights. That's why I ran for this job. That's why I decided to get in. I've got four kids who love me. I don't need any more fame. I've got my kids. But I will not allow them to grow up in a state that's going to become California in 10 years. I will not allow my kids to grow up in a state that acts like a sanctuary state or where the federal government can come and take our lands and take our rights with impunity. I'm going to fight for my kids and for your kids and make sure that we give this country back to the voice of the people.
Amen. Wow, I love your fighting spirit. Trent Christensen. Everyone, get on, support this guy. Is it TrentChristensen.com?
Yes, yes, ma'am.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us, and we will see y'all next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a part of the Michelle Tanner Podcast. Please like, follow, subscribe, and share. And always remember to keep exposing truth.
But I won't back down. No, I won't back down.